This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by Northwest Safe. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Tom, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? A Jason Rand exclusive.
So you know that we deeply care about officers and law enforcement officers all across the state of Washington, all across the country. We appreciate the hell out of everything they do every single day, that they decide to put on that uniform, go out into communities to help, run towards danger while we run away from it. Put on a uniform that to some indicates a target on their back. I especially care about the cops in this community because they are so loathed by this council in Seattle, by a lot of activists in the community, and someone needs to tell their story. Someone needs to be a voice on their behalf. And with that, I bring you the story that we have right now. It's an exclusive at KTTH.com. We know that last year, the SPD, the Seattle Police Department, they experienced what was determined to be a historically large number of officers separating from the department. This year, the numbers continue to grow. The amount of officers continues to grow of people who are leaving the force, despite, by the way, this recruitment push by the city of Seattle. And as a result of that, cops are telling me that we have a, quote, dangerously low, end quote, number of officers who are patrolling the streets of Seattle. What does that mean? It means citizens' lives are in danger, potentially, and officers' lives are in danger, potentially. In fact, one cop told me that Lake City shooting last week, it nearly brought the department to its knees, according to this cop. Now, the problem is creating a staffing domino effect. As specialty units within the SPD deal with the exact same staffing shortage that the patrol officers are dealing with, the department then relies on something called on-loan officers, making up for the missing body. So here's how it works. You've got patrol officers. These are the ones who go out into the community. These are the ones who respond to 911 calls and try to do their best to proactively police in a city that really doesn't like proactive policing. Now, the city will list 747 patrol officers for this rather large and growing city. Only when they tell you there are 747 patrol officers, they are double counting some officers. They are counting officers who don't do patrols whatsoever. In fact, right now, or at least as of January, at the end of January, these are the latest numbers, finally, through a PDR I was able to get, 117 of them don't do any patrols at all. They go to specialty units. Specialty units are the groups of officers that do not respond to 911 calls. They're not the ones who are proactively policing. These are not on patrol. These are officers in the navigation team, for example. The navigation team going from homeless encampment to homeless encampment, trying to connect people with services. These are officers in the gang unit or the traffic unit. These officers, however, by the city of Seattle are being considered patrol officers. Now, one SPD staffer told me patrol units are short-staffed. On the flip side, the horrible thing, there's so many specialty units that are hurting too. The burglary theft unit cannot keep up with crimes. It's horrible all around. We have just so many officers leaving. Now, how many officers do we have leaving? A lot. A lot. A mid-career officer told me that staffing is a joke, that they routinely are at or below minimum staffing levels. That's the number of officers they need to be on duty to properly protect individual precincts. One officer told me we are probably at one or two above minimum staffing 3 days a week, which means we are at or below minimum staffing the other 4 days. There isn't less crime or less calls for service, and I work in some of the fastest growing residential neighborhoods in the city. Yet the minimum staffing numbers continue to go down. We are asked to do more and more with fewer people. Now, this is a concern that I've heard from virtually every single precinct. I have sources in almost every single precinct. Cops are telling me about this. Now, here's a problem. We had a whole bunch of officers react to the Lake City shooting last week. Tons of officers. As a result of the bad staffing scenarios, one officer told me the Lake City incident nearly took our department to its knees. We had units from other precincts coming up to take calls. Had another significant incident occurred anywhere, we would have been out of people. Meaning, we're always just one significant incident away from having no cops to reasonably and quickly respond. That's a problem. And when you actually talk to some of these cops, what they'll tell you is when there's an incident like that Lake City shooting, man, if you're a thief working in Soto, good news, you're not going to have any cops patrolling there. You're going to be able to get away with those burglaries or assaults or shooting up in the middle of the streets because all the cops are diverted to the major incident. That's how serious this is. But Jason, they just offered this bonus program. They are getting more cops coming in. Actually, no, they're not. So far, the recruitment efforts that are both here in Washington State and all across the country, they've gone to Indianapolis. They've gone to, I believe, Maui. They've gone to all of these other states in the U.S. They have been, as of now, complete failures. Now, to be fair, sometimes you have to plant the seed and then you get that recruitment coming in a few months from when you first visited. But as of right now, this is being seen as a huge failure. So last year in total, the Seattle Police Department saw 110 officer separations. Separations is the term they use that covers resignations, retirements. That includes if someone drops out of the academy or is fired. All of that's all inclusive. 110 officer separations last year. Despite this new recruitment effort, despite an overdue contract, remember, they were working without a contract for almost 4 years. Despite that, they saw 7 resignations in the last 2 months of last year. And then going into this new year, when everything is clear, they're going to get their new contract. It's already in place. 22 total separations equally divided between resignations and retirements. This is happening as we've heard more and more stories from people complaining about the prolific offenders who are committing crime after crime after crime in our streets. We hear this after the CEO of Bartell Drugs came out and said, our people, our employees are not safe in downtown Seattle. We're not going to further expand in downtown Seattle. We're hearing this now, as I'm told from multiple sources, that the SPD has almost 200 officers who are up for retirement this year. Now, if you're being mistreated by a council, if you're not being properly given funding by the mayor, if you've got communities that are constantly targeting you, calling you murderers, calling you bigots, if you're near retirement age, if you're at that age, something tells me you're going to take retirement and move on. Because why would you deal with all the nonsense in the city of Seattle? If we were to lose 200 officers right now, we would barely have a police force. We would barely have a police force. And they're doing a really good job of keeping this information secret. I first put in a public disclosure request for the numbers that I've been using for the on loans. I put this in back in July of last year. Back in July of last year, I got it, I believe, in January. And since I received the data, I've been going back and forth trying to get some additional context from the SPD, specifically Mike Fields. He's basically the HR director. I would send email after email after email. I would be told, oh, I can get you that info. Hang on, don't worry. Then silence. And then I would wait more and more and more. Then I would email again. And then they would come back, wait, what is it that you're asking for? Can you send me the data that you have from us that we just gave you? And then I would send it back, and then silence, and then more silence, and silence again. And so finally I decided to just go with what we had and use other sources within the Seattle Police Department to get this story. They are not taking this seriously enough. Now, for the longest time, you'll remember last year when we've been all over these stories about staffing and a mass exodus that is absolutely happening within the Seattle Police Department, Mayor Durkin called me a liar. Do you remember that?
Yeah, she did.
She was like, that report is incorrect. Now, to make the case that I was incorrect on the staffing data, she used old data to back up her claim. Now, at the time that she made that claim that my data about officers leaving was incorrect, she had updated info she chose not to use. She chose not to use it. And now all of a sudden, they're saying, oh, we do have a staffing problem. We do. We have to attack this rather urgently. That's why we've got this bonus structure out. Now, I reached out to the mayor's office multiple times, trying to see if she wanted to talk about this. And of course, they turned us down all the time. Every once in a while, when they think they might be able to manipulate me into giving them good press, they toss out the idea of maybe you'll get to speak with the mayor. I'm not that interested in speaking to the mayor. I just want to be fair and get a perspective. And so I reached out last week, no response whatsoever. I then reached out again yesterday trying to get word, and I go through her communications department, her director of communications, Mark Prentice, And I asked, hey, I've not heard anything from you guys yet. Are you guys interested in doing it? And she says, have you reached out to the SPD? And then I said, yes. And now I'm reaching out to the mayor. And then I asked again. I said, hey, if you could let me know 6 p.m. yesterday, by 6 p.m., I would love to do something with her so we can get her perspective on the record. The response was, will your story include the important context of her budget that provided for hiring more officers and her lateral hire ordinance that she signed into law? They're just trying to get me to include positive stories about the mayor in order for them to participate in this, which I'm not going to do. I'm not just going to give you positive coverage to get access to an interview. I have no interest in that. I have no interest in that. At least not with Mayor Jenny Durkan. I think I got a little snarky in return.
What'd you say?
It wasn't that bad. I said, I mentioned the fact that now, despite calling my Exodus story false last year, she's taking this staffing issue seriously. That's not horrible. It's a little passive.
A little passive. I've seen you do worse.
I've definitely done worse. Now, why is this important? The fewer people we have on the streets patrolling our neighborhoods, the more dangerous it is. That it makes it a lot easier for a disabled person to get beat up by some dude with a bat that actually happened in Seattle. This stuff is happening because we don't have enough cops in the community. And the cops that we do have in the community, you know what's happening? They're basically being told not to police. Explicitly and implicitly. Now, if you want to back the blue, just like we try to do on the show, please text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. 8770. I will send you a link to my story. Please read it. But more importantly, make sure you're also posting it. Post it on Facebook, post it on Twitter. This stuff needs to be called out. And if we don't call it out, the problem will not get fixed. We need to put pressure on this council to start appreciating cops. And we need to put pressure on the mayor's office to look at this story through a lens of reality. Because right now, it's not really happening to the degree that I think is necessary. Text RANTZ to the number 1-800-465-8770. We'll go ahead and send you my blog. Don't forget, we're all on Twitter. Twitter.com/JasonRants. Go there now. Hit the follow button. You can see me make fun of Jay Inslee, who sent a rather absurd tweet the other day that I retweeted, and I think it's my most popular tweet ever. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Twitter.com/JasonRants. Right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So the Washington State Department of Corrections, they quietly announced via a memo that was put out last month, they quietly announced a new policy saying that prisoners can no longer receive used books in prison from nonprofit organizations. Now, that came as a little bit of a shock to some of the nonprofit organizations that contribute books to the Department of Corrections Department here in Washington State. Michelle Dillon is a volunteer and board member for a group called Books for Prisoners. She tells our sister station, Kyle Radio, that they've been donating books to prisoners for years, and then all of a sudden, these books started getting sent back, and they were like, what's up?
We had started to get some increased rejections of the packages of books that we are mailing out to prisons starting in 2018. And we knew that that was not a good sign because, unfortunately, prison book programs across the country have had to face similar challenges in recent years. And so when we started to get those increased rejections, we started to think, well, maybe this means that Washington is attempting to do the same thing.
Womp womp. Murderers, rapists, they don't have access to the same amount of books that they had before. Dillon says she doesn't understand why the Department of Corrections are turning away these books.
There's often an ulterior motive involved, whether that's just continued control of the population or sometimes it can be a financial motive. We can't speak for the Washington DOC. We don't know what necessarily the rationale is other than what they stated, but we know from the history of prison book programs the typical pattern.
Well, I feel like you can just read the memo and maybe have a somewhat understanding of what it is they're doing, because it seems like they're inferring this is about safety precautions, because in this memo, they say a reminder to staff members to, quote, make every effort to properly inspect, end quote, these books that are already in possession of these prisoners, search them for contraband. So I'm assuming they're doing this as a security precaution because maybe someone is sneaking in stuff that they're not supposed to have inside of these books, whether we're talking about drugs or weapons or just, you know, cigarettes or something. So, I mean, that seems to, like they do in the movies.
Or shiv.
Well, I said weapons, but I mean...
Well, specifically a shiv.
But I don't... If you're going to give a weapon, why would you give a shiv? Why wouldn't you just give a knife?
I don't think you want to kill them. I think you just want to send a message.
You know shivs kill people, right?
No. Shanks kill people. Shivs aren't meant to be fatal. You're a talk show. You need to know this stuff.
Okay. I mean, to be fair, you have done hard time. And we got you on a prisoner exchange program, and we trained you up. We don't leave you in the building alone with anyone or with any expensive equipment, but you're always supervised.
I do have experience, but I also knew that going in.
So let's be clear about something because some people are looking at this as a social justice cause, because a lot of the books that they would sometimes request from these nonprofits would be dictionaries, and they're doing that so they can get their lives together and become educated. They still get books donated through libraries run by the state. The policy that they have right now, according to MyNorthwest.com, says it accepts books sent by both the Washington State Library and the Monroe City Library. So they're still having access to this. Pardon me if I'm not going to cry about the fact that they don't have access to books. I mean, what am I supposed... Am I supposed to feel bad? Am I supposed to feel sad that a murderer, someone who raped a child, someone who beat up someone... I'm supposed to feel bad that they don't have access to The Great Gatsby?
Yeah, I don't think prisons are meant to be an entertainment center.
This whole idea, and I guess I understand it from one perspective of... You got to give them something to do, otherwise they might turn to violence just to do something. Are we going to just keep them in their cages, right? In their cells.
You think like a good hardback book could be a weapon? I mean, it's swift.
Yeah,
you
if
know.
You get one of the Harry Potter books,
ooh,
or a Stephen King book, you can bludgeon someone
to
death.
Yeah, it's a hardback book. That can hurt.
You can bludgeon someone to death. So... I hear you. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
I'm told it's a stinky situation in Tacoma. Because it smells.
It smells like garbage. Like a whole bunch of like people where they're not, you know, emptying the trashes.
It reminded me of the old Asarco smell when Asarco was here.
Just straight dog food. Pretty pungent, too.
I just, not for nothing. All three of those people gave wildly different descriptions on the smell. Dog food does not smell like garbage. Dog food has a smell. It's not a pleasant smell, but it smells like a certain thing versus trash, which smells like something completely different.
Right.
One's a foul odor, one's just an unpleasant odor, and there is a little bit of a difference between that. The smell in Tacoma started on Saturday, but apparently yesterday, especially in the morning, it was way worse. Cairo 7 TV tracked the smell to the Darling International facility, which had an equipment failure over the weekend. What did this place do? And maybe now you get a better idea as to why it smelled like dog food. They say it takes in byproducts from slaughter livestock. Ew. That's gross. The Puget Sound Clean Air Agency started getting nearly 24 complaints about the smell since Saturday. Darling says the issue was fixed yesterday, but Puget Sound Clean Air Agency says the plant remained shut down. And they're having an investigation to find out how this happened. Because presumably, just because you have some equipment failure doesn't necessarily mean the entire area is going to smell. Although I suppose it depends on which equipment and for how long it was done. Because if it's dog food, that just means the byproducts of the slaughtered animals are just sort of sitting there rotten.
Yeah, but doesn't Tacoma always smell?
No, don't do that. Just because you're from Auburn and you want to throw a little shade on Tacoma.
The Tacoma aroma.
Okay. Uh-huh.
The Tacoma aroma is
big. I've been to Tacoma many times. I rather like downtown Tacoma. I've never smelled this kind of mess.
It's always smell.
You're just saying that because you're from Auburn.
And Auburn doesn't smell. I go to Tacoma, it smells. I don't know what it smells like. That Tacoma has a distinct smell.
You know what it is? It's you. You put on some deodorant. You're always in the gym. You don't wear deodorant. It's disgusting. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. We'll send you a link to my latest blog. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Seattle's homelessness is out of control. Unfortunately, Mayor Jenny Durkin and the Seattle City Council, they don't seem to care too much about attacking the problem. Instead, they're claiming in a lawsuit that the manufacturers of opioids are to blame. And while residents are asking for answers, the mayor is skipping out on community meetings for fear that she'll likely get yelled at by the public. One of the local activists trying to change things is Ari Hoffman. He is a small business owner who's had to deal with the problem impacting businesses such as his. He's so fed up, he's running for council in District 2. That includes Southeast Seattle. Those neighborhoods include Beacon Hill, SoDo, and the International District. Ari Hoffman joins me live now. Ari, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, buddy. It's great to be back.
So it's not a new lawsuit. So why the sudden attention? Because you've taken a deep dive into this City of Seattle lawsuit that they're waging against Purdue.
I'm really lucky that a bunch of people have come from all over the city and want to help with the campaign, not just from District 2. And I have a great crew of researchers that just keep digging until they find stuff that we can use. And now they're digging for multiple things. Some of the stuff they're digging for is stuff to support our positions. Some of it is ideas we can use to try and fix the crisis. And some of it is just to expose what's going on with the city. So, for example, with the Genesee Park incident, when the city wanted to open a car park for people sleeping in their cars without consulting anybody, without talking to anybody, right in the middle of a public park right near a bunch of schools and houses, they were very helpful in digging up a lot of that material, and so were a lot of other people in the neighborhood. So what happened was they were researching some stuff with regard to the opioid crisis and found these lawsuits. And I don't know why they didn't get the attention at the time, but it's amazing that the city of Seattle and King County in these lawsuits specifically say all the things that we've been saying that the city's telling us are just not the case.
Like what?
So they're saying that opioids is one of the leading causes of homelessness. They're saying that people who are on opioids cannot get out of homelessness because they're struggling with the addiction problems. It's that we're finding needles in parks everywhere, that grounds crews are dealing with it at the parks department, that's becoming unmanageable, that the police are having problems dealing with it. It's all the stuff we've known, but for so long the city is saying, nope, look the other way, there's nothing to see here.
Well, and beyond that, they usually say the problem isn't really being driven by addiction or mental illness. These are people just like you and me who are one missed paycheck away from landing out on the streets. That's just demonstrably not true, and it reads as false to anyone who is being honest about their experiences in the city of Seattle.
Right, absolutely. They're trying to say this is a housing affordability crisis, and they're trying to say if we just get everybody houses, everything will be fine. And the problem is, and I've met with a lot of addiction centers and recovery centers and people in recovery, they just keep telling me over and over again that if you give somebody who's addicted to opioids a place to live, they're just going to do drugs in that new place to live. It's not going to solve anything. It's just going to enable them more. So this really flies in the face of all that. And it seems like last week, or the last 2 weeks rather, with the Seattle is Dying special on Como, there has been an organized effort to try and refute that, to try and say, oh, well, you got to question who paid for it, you got to question who wrote it, you got to question the data. But right now we're looking at data from King County and from Seattle that supports everything in that video.
So for you, as you're embarking on this campaign, and by the way, if you want to learn more about Ari Hoffman's campaign, HoffmanForSeattle.com, spell it all out, it's F-O-R-Seattle.com, HoffmanForSeattle.com. As you're talking with people, as you're talking with residents and business owners, what are some of the solutions people are pushing to this problem?
The number one thing that people say when I knock on their door is, are you going to solve the homeless crisis? And then when you break it down and you say to them, it's not really a homeless crisis, it's a drug crisis, they agree right away. They say, can we get the needles off the streets? Can we get the needles out of the parks? They are tired. They've had enough of it. At the same time, they want these people to get the treatment and help that they need, the mental services that they need. They want that kind of stuff. They don't really mention the housing affordability thing because they're seeing with their own eyes the needles and the people on the streets who are shooting up in broad daylight. So really what people want is they want a solution that takes care of these people, that gets them the help they need, because they see what's happening in front of them on the streets.
So do you get the sense that the momentum remains? Do you get the sense that the momentum is still there from the Amazon head tax, which for a lot of people, and I think yourself included, sort of turned on a switch of, oh, we could actually fight back and make some meaningful change?
I think that the Amazon head tax got the ball rolling on that with organizations like Speak Out Seattle, who are having forums all over town. I don't remember in all the years I've lived here anybody having forums like that for city council races, and now they're happening all over the place, and they're having social hours so you can meet the candidates because people are finally engaged in the electoral process and want to know who's going to be representing them because they see what happened with representatives they just voted for without knowing much about, or they just read about in the voter's guide, and people are making an effort. It seemed like during the summer, maybe heading into the fall, it kind of died down a little bit, but then Seattle is Dying, the video by Como, really seemed to switch that back on, and it's been growing ever since.
If you're just joining us, Ari Hoffman is on the line. He is running for Seattle City Council in District Number 2. That includes Beacon Hill and the International District, Soto. If you don't think this is a Seattle issue, or you exclusively think this is a Seattle issue, let me tell you, bad policies of Seattle tend to spread. And so part of this effort in taking back Washington means putting on the council some semblance of reasonable politicians. And Ari Hoffman is not a politician, but he's certainly reasonable. So if you want to get more involved in his campaign, even if you're not a voter, go to hoffmanforseattle.com. Now, at the same time, Ari, it was implied that Mayor Jenny Durkan would be attending a meeting this week, I believe, hosted by the South Seattle Crime Prevention Council. This was all about the idea of parking lots for homeless individuals, the Genesee Park parking lot that you referenced earlier on in the interview. It looks like she's not going to be attending.
So we got a letter yesterday from Pat Murakami, who's running in District 3 against Keshava Sawant, who runs this and has been running it for a very, very long time. She's been running this group for years. And she was the one who organized the meeting last month, and this meeting turned into a hearing pretty much on the car park, and 200 people showed up to demand accountability from city officials. And what was fascinating was that there were people on both sides of the aisle there. The people who were saying, we don't want this in our neighborhood, the people who were saying, we don't want people sleeping in cars, and the people who were saying, we do want this, but because you guys weren't accountable for it, because there was no visibility on what you're doing, no transparency, you jeopardize the whole thing.
And that happens
a lot. They were getting it from both sides.
Yeah, and that happens a lot.
It happens all the time.
It happened with the South Lake Union Tiny Home Village when they decided that they were just going to put it up. They decided that they didn't care about what the public had to say. They lied about the fact that they had already made up their mind, and they went ahead and did it anyway.
And they're doing it again in Georgetown right now with the Sobering Center. They're already undergoing construction for that, and they didn't consult with anybody. And the residents are very upset because people forget all the time that there's houses in Georgetown, and they're right nearby this facility, and they were never consulted. So Mayor Durkan was scheduled to be at the meeting this month for the precinct council, for the precinct meeting, and we got a letter yesterday from Pat saying that she had canceled and that she wasn't coming.
Well, hopefully we can put some pressure on her to actually show up and speak directly to the community members that, you know, she represents. She has been to Lake City, I think, now twice. Once after it was politically untenable to ignore Lake City, and then, of course, after the shooting last week. But unless she's forced into it, she doesn't seem to be willing to talk to people. She's certainly not really willing to talk to media outlets. I've been talking with Ari Hoffman.
Go ahead.
Final words.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say that seems to be the MO for all of our elected officials, because when we were having the issues with the drug dealers and prostitution up at the cemeteries up north in Seattle, some of the elected officials from the city council were supposed to meet us out there and didn't show up. So it seems to be when they think that a crowd is gathering to demand accountability and transparency, they don't show up.
Ari Hoffman is running in District Number 2, hoffmanforseattle.com. Go there now. You can learn about his campaign, the issues, and find out ways you can help him, whether or not you live in District 2 or whether or not you live in Seattle. HoffmanForSeattle.com. Ari, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, buddy. Always
absolutely. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Students are planning a walkout tomorrow at Issaquah High School because a girl who's 17 years old made a racist joke, and we're pretending that a bad joke should be enough to ruin a young girl's life. I'm actually quite sick of this story. I'm sick on all accounts. It's just annoying to have to deal with this kind of stuff because you have to understand there's actually only one victim here. And weirdly, it's the victim who made the racist joke. There's no doubt at all that the joke was racist, but it was a joke. It was insensitive. It was offensive. But that's it. Apparently, Issaquah High School is having a dance where girls ask the boys out. Tolo? I have no idea what that means.
You don't know what Tolo
I've
is?
I've never heard of this before in my life.
Oh, man.
What is it?
It's what you said. The girl asked a guy to dance. To a dance.
Okay. You know what she put in the sign to ask her presumably boyfriend out? It said, if I was black, I'd be picking cotton, but instead I pick you. Now, apparently she saw that online somewhere and she thought it was funny. And it's not. It's racist. There's no doubt. But she clearly, when you just judge it by this, you can't say that she's a racist. You can say that she used racist humor. Racist humor that maybe a 17-year-old who doesn't have a life's worth of experiences might use, not understanding why it might be inappropriate. But now everyone is going out of their way to not just condemn the language, but talk about how, oh, this really hurts so many people. District spokesperson Elle Michelle is pretending to Cairo 7 TV that she was deeply troubled.
We're going to do a methodical, deliberate, intentional investigation. It was heartbreaking.
Oh.
It was absolutely heartbreaking.
You can tell in her tone that her heart is literally breaking. Just heartbreaking to see. The NAACP of Seattle, King County got involved, even though this didn't happen in Seattle nor King County. Their president, Sadiqa Sakin, said, the message was insensitive and extremely hurtful and has the Seattle King County NAACP highly concerned with the potential gap in diversity trainings in school districts around our state. I'll certainly acknowledge that it was insensitive. I think that the joke is deeply insensitive. It's not extremely hurtful. You're not hurt. Sadiqa Sakin is not hurt. Elle Michelle over at the district is not hurt. Let us not pretend being offended with being hurt. They are two different things. That sign did absolutely nothing to your physical well-being, nor frankly to your mental well-being. Because everyone acknowledges that there's such a thing as racism in this country. It's nowhere near as bad as it used to be, but it still exists. And everyone acknowledges that there are also racist jokes being told on a regular basis. Sometimes by white people, sometimes by Latinos, sometimes by Asians, sometimes by black people. We understand that. And you are pretending that some stupid post on Snapchat with this image is somehow going to bring down all of society in Issaquah. Now, the girl responded yesterday on Instagram. I'll read her statement in part. And yes, I know who this girl is. We have her name. I'm choosing not to give out her name because, number one, she's a minor. And number two, I don't want to participate in trying to ruin her life because of a mistake as a 17-year-old. She says, I want you to know that I'm genuinely sorry for hurt feelings, chaos, and rage that my Tolo poster caused. Unfortunately, the wrong image of myself was portrayed through the words written on the poster. Those who know my true heart know that I'm not a racist and that evil way of thinking is something that makes me sick. I have no excuse for what was said, and I take full responsibility. I am sorry to those who were affected. I feel so genuinely mortified and sorry about the situation that I'm physically ill over it. I feel bad for her, and she's the real victim in all of this. Now, she didn't need to be a victim in all of this. We could have rationally discussed this. The school district could have rationally discussed this. The students there who are asking for a walkout, even though they all seem to acknowledge that racism on campus is not a significant issue that they're dealing with, they could have actually said, hey, girl, whose name I'm not going to say, here is why this joke is not an actual joke to me. Here's why your statement could be perceived as hurtful. Now, I know that you didn't intend to do that. It was all a joke. But understand that those types of jokes, they have some consequences. And the consequence right now is people think you're racist and people feel uncomfortable around you. You could have that conversation. You can absolutely have that conversation without turning this into the biggest story Issaquah has ever had to deal with. You have a 17-year-old girl who did something stupid, whose life is literally on the line right now. Why? Because like all 17-year-olds, boys and girls, they think anything like this happens to them could be the end of the world for them. And I feel bad for this kid. I feel bad for this girl. She should not have made the joke. 100% she should not have made it. But we should also understand there is a reasonable way to respond. And turning this into a national story, which thanks to Doug Baldwin of the Seahawks, this story turned into a national one. She is feeling the pressure of the weight of the world on her right now because of a mistake. And for the people who want to quickly judge this girl, unless you're going to bring up some actual evidence that she's a racist, acts out in racist ways, has a propensity for racist jokes, unless you're willing to do that, understand you're ruining this girl's life. And you're actively trying to ruin her life. Now, to be fair, there are some students out there who are being a little bit more fair on this. Jake Murphy is a student, said the mistake should not result in an expulsion.
I would think that, like, just seeing it before even giving it to the guy she was giving it to, that she would have thought, like, this is not okay. I don't think it's, like, serious enough that they need to be, like, expelled or, like suspended for a long time.
Now, depending on where this image was taken, she's may not be up for any kind of suspension or expulsion at Issaquah High School. Right? I mean, you can't punish her for a bad joke that you don't happen to like if the joke took place, for example, off campus. This is protected speech. In fact, I'd argue that it's probably protected on speech on campus as well. Again, it depends on some circumstances around it. Was she skipping school when she did it? But this is clearly protected speech. I don't know why people want to so quickly jump down into the lives of teenagers to try to ruin their lives. And I'm quite consistent on this. We did the story out of Mercer Island 3 weeks ago where kids were playing a drinking game having to do with Nazism. Do you remember that story? And a photo went viral and people were talking about it. And I take the same position now. Do I think they're anti-Semitic? No, I think they were making the joke. A politically incorrect joke. I'm going to judge it solely based on the evidence that you put in front of me and whether it's an image of the sign that this girl has or the image of the two white kids on Mercer Island who aren't Jewish, I don't think, playing this Nazi Hitler drinking game. I'm going to just look at that and say, you know what? These are kids who make stupid mistakes, who should learn a lesson from all of this, but whose lives we do not have to destroy to make a point. So the next time you jump down their throats, just think about the harm you're actually doing and how much worse you're making this, not just for them, but for the community. No one right now in Issaquah is like, oh, because of this sign, I don't think I can even go to school anymore. It's just not a safe space. The people who hold that position held that position before this photo. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rantz Show.